Hello, everybody. I'm here with Ginny Brown. She is the founder and former director of the Bowen Training Center in Australia. She is the author of the book Growing Yourself Up: How to Bring Your Best to All of Life's Relationships, and has a forthcoming book called The Parenting Paradox: How to Love Your Children by Giving Them Space to Grow, which is coming out in June of 2026. She is the architect of the Parent Hope Project, which applies the concepts of Bowen theory to parenting, focusing on empowering and supporting parents in today's complex world, which seems to be getting more complex. And she lives and works and writes in Sydney, Australia. It's so great to have you, Jenny.
Well, good to be with you, Guillermo. I look forward to our conversation. And thank you for scheduling when it's daytime here in Australia. Very good.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you for being here. Ginny, to get started, well, just tell me a little bit about did you grow up in Sydney, Australia?
I did. Sydney, born and bred in the suburbs of Sydney. And I did have the opportunity just after I finished school to have a year in Connecticut, USA. So my links to the US are there. And then in 1990, with my husband and at the time, two little girls, we moved to live in the New York area. So, but I've been back in Australia. We were overseas for 6 years. It's where I came across Bowen theory. So it was a very pivotal time for me personally and professionally. But then back to Australia at the end of that decade and living in Sydney again. And
Wow.
it's a be it is a beautiful city to live in. Not perfect. Very expensive, getting busier and busier, but yeah, we're spoilt with the natural beauty around us here in Sydney.
I bet, I bet. And you were telling me that picture
Oh,
behind
you
you
know
is
about
the.
that in Florida, of course, yeah.
Absolutely. And speaking of the beauty, that picture behind you were saying is the Sydney Harbour, right? And like an aerial.
Yeah, like a drone view looking down to the harbor and the different tones of the water on a sunny day.
Oh, it's
It's
beautiful.
a favorite.
So tell me a little bit. You mentioned you came into when you came into contact with Bowen theory. What were you doing? How did that happen? Were you already practicing as a therapist at the time?
Yeah, I was. So I had trained as, I mean, the cutting a long story short, I started studying law. I escaped from law to studying social studies, which took me down the social work route. And then this is all in Australia in the early days. And then I did family therapy training, couple and family therapy training. And then I moved. I never heard of Bowen in that training in Sydney back in the late 1980s. Came to the US. And in Australia, entry level happens at postgrads, at undergrad. So I wasn't able to work with just an undergrad social work degree. So I did an advanced standing social work degree at Columbia University, and where they fast tracked me. And then thought, how can I make the most of this unique experience being where there are so many family therapy centers? It was still the heyday of family therapy. And so I found an intensive training program, a 2-year program at the Family Institute of Westchester under Betty Carter's supervision, small group supervision, a faculty there. I never met Bowen directly. The month I arrived in to live in the US was the month that Murray Bowen died in October 1990. No, that's not correct. When did I go? Yeah, that's it. October 1990. So I discovered Bowen. We use family evaluation as our core text. I discovered Bowen reading it and being supervised in Bowen theory. from somebody who's a few steps removed from direct training with Bowen, but as you would have heard from so many people you speak to, it just turned the lights on for me on the cases that I've been working with in Australia as a family therapist. I was used to hypothesizing for in Milan systemic strategic family therapy. It always felt like this giant leap of faith that didn't scientifically actually make sense. We were just perturbing the system and hoping that there would be a resistance to homeostasis and things would kind of take a new direction. And sometimes that worked, and we didn't quite understand how. So when I read Bowen theory, I thought, this helps me understand process of change, process of symptom development in a family system. And of course, it shone a spotlight into understanding my own family and my growing up. So I was hooked on Bowen theory. It gets under your skin when you see the impact in your own life. I started my own coaching and looking at my family of origin, and I've been at it ever since.
What was one of the first things when you were kind of thinking about this set of ideas that you're like, ah, that's me.
Oh, so many. And it's a long time ago to remember what were the key light bulbs. I mean, it was a pivotal time in my life, living away from my family. I think that intensified thinking about family. My mother had died when I was 21. He died of cancer. My father was getting older and a little more frail, and I was living on the other side of the world. So it had my attention just really thinking about who are we all in our family? How do we all respond to the challenges of life? We lived through a big, big challenge and loss where the youngest of my siblings was 15 when my mother died. And just thinking about how do we manage that? How did all of us manage it differently? How did we not do so well with it? And indeed, I did get up in some of my case work with a family on avoiding opening up conversations about grief and loss. So that got my attention. How has distance been a way of moving forward as a family, but also what are the costs of it? So there are a few examples.
That's fantastic. It
I
seems like a lot
imagine,
was going
does that
on.
resonate for you, Jomo, when you think about what were the initial light bulbs
Oh,
of Bowen theory?
absolutely. Absolutely. I remember when I first came into contact with it, distance was a huge one for me. And then I was just seeing it everywhere in my life and my functioning. And it gave me a way to think about my functioning in relation to my family a little bit. And I think that continues to reveal itself a little bit at a time as I grow up.
Yes, that growing up, it never stops. Yeah, indeed.
I had a class tonight. Well, and actually in my other class, we're teaching your book, Growing Yourself Up. But tonight somebody asked, one of the students asked me, when is the, you know, when is this done? And I was like, never.
No. And that's hard to sell in this anxious era when people are looking for a quick fix. But once you start the journey and you see the world differently, see the system, it takes a long time to really see it and you lose it at times, but it's just a whole new way of looking at the world, isn't it? It helps you navigate the surprising things that come along as well as the predictable everyday.
You know, Jenny, if you were going to just introduce family systems as an idea, as a concept, how would you just describe the simple difference between that way of thinking, family systems way of thinking versus maybe this individual model of where we pathologize people, diagnose them.
I would say it's how we're always affecting each other. That's it. Whereas individual therapy, how am I affected? Or what's going on for inside that person, and how do I make sense of them? And family systems is the dynamic of how it's always reciprocal. Everyone plays a part, everyone's affecting each other. And I remember in writing Growing Yourself Up quite a few years ago, now the first edition in 2012. Remember going back and editing my case examples to check that I never gave a linear idea that just because this happened in the family of origin, that explains this person now. It's not like that. And a lot of people hear Bowen theory and they interpret it in a linear transmission way, which is just one piece of it. Because as we know, what this, a person, an individual takes out of their family of origin experience has a whole new dynamic that gets played out in their current relationships. So I had to be very careful in my writing to check that I was giving that message all the way through, that there is no endpoint. It's always a cycle. This is what this person did, and they were aware of how they were shaping other people's responses. So that's where I'd go with explaining the difference. What would you
It's
add?
I don't know if I would add anything. I think that's a simple way to a very clear, simple way to put it. It's how we affect each other, not how I am affected, but how are we affecting each other, and how can you help somebody think about that process and then what they want to do about it?
Yeah, the back and forth. It's always the back and forth. And so interesting that even the people who don't look very active in the back and forth are part of the back and forth. There are distances. Although I just distance to some things. In other things, I am getting in people's road and overfunctioning. So I don't want to give the idea that I'm just one of those distancing types. I have my version of that, and my family certainly needed it to get through the loss of such an important person in our family system. But I do the other dances well. Many of the others. And learning to be aware of that and continually seeing it and picking up on it is really valuable.
I hear you. I do them all too. You just said something that I think is so helpful to point out, that sometimes whatever a family does in the moment is adaptive, even though it might not be the best thing long term. I think you said some that distance was necessary almost in order to get through.
It was the best that we had access to that. And of course, it helped some adapt better than others. So it certainly helped me adapt, and I could distance into my relationship and who is still my husband. I had things to distance and to redirect my investment in, but younger members of the family who had been more anxiously focused on as well by my parents, it's not been such an adaptive road. So it varies, doesn't it, where the symptoms land in a family.
That
But
whatever the
in
adapt.
many ways, we've as a family system, there is amongst all the vulnerabilities and where symptoms landed, there is still, and I think every family has this, the capacity to adapt and grow. And part of my thinking in working in the field is how us helpers don't get in the road of that. by jumping in with our fixing efforts to make space for that for people and to do their best. But it's all about, and that's another key part to help people understand the difference of Bowen family systems theory is just how it fits as a natural systems theory, adapting to environmental changes in order to move forward in predictable ways, but often out of awareness at that physiological, deep, more primitive level. I
I
don't need
love
to tell you
that.
that.
No, I get it. And I also love the idea of the therapist getting out of the way. I think people come to therapy looking for a solution. And if you get too excited about giving it, it actually can inhibit somebody, steal their autonomy.
Yeah, indeed. But you know what that raises for me as well? I remember a younger, newer graduate working on Bowen theory, had trained as a clinical psychologist, steeped in CBT, wanting to reduce the giving directives. And I remember her saying, "I'm just sitting there doing nothing. And I don't know what to do. I don't know what to replace it with." And sitting back and just letting a person talk is not a helpful thing, is it? It's this sense of how I think that when people come for help, the kind of help that we give is to really help them focus in on researching the painful situation that they're in and paying attention to it with them. And they feel that we're not dismissing it and saying, "Oh, you can sort this out yourself." We're researching it together, helping to make sense of it in the system.
I really love that, this idea of researching the deep pain that you're in, a challenging situation, painful situation. How do you become invested in paying attention to it, becoming aware of it? Wow.
Because pain is very motivating, is it can be. It can be energized to motivate to, this isn't working for me. This is painful. I've tried everything. I've tried a whole lot of different things, and it is painful to just have all my efforts not come to an adequate resolution. So I think that can be mobilized in the clinical process and really be helpful when a coach clinician can guide someone to start really making sense of their pain. I remember hearing Dr. Kerr in a webinar many years ago say that progress in therapy is where something painful starts to become something interesting. And that stayed with me. And what's that process in our own lives and for those that we come alongside to help, of where what is painful gets opened up with curiosity that is focused curiosity, really guided by a knowledge of Bowen theory. Curiosity on its own can get us all over the place. Curiosity about how we're all affecting each other and how the family responded to different levels of adversity, and how some siblings struggled in certain ways while others flourished. That kind of systems curiosity takes people from feeling helpless and burdened to hopeful, hence the Parenthood Project. It's that sense of from pain to curious to interest. This is interesting to me.
I really appreciate that nuance of it's not just curiosity, it's directed curiosity. It's curiosity about something that's happening.
How do you think about it clinically in terms of that directed curiosity?
Well, I think you, when you were talking about getting curious about how it works in this in the process of it, the emotional process, how it works in the system, what those interconnections are like, that reciprocity between people, getting curious about all that and my part in it, or helping somebody think about their part in it.
And just even listening to you, Guillermo, it gets me thinking as we're sitting there in the clinician seat, thinking about our part as well, if we get too caught in getting in the way of people making this their project.
So, speaking of projects and hope, how tell me a little bit about this Parent Hope project.
Wow,
How are
that
you
was a
giving
good
parents hope?
segue, wasn't it? Well, okay, this is another long story I've got to make short. But I have had, since coming back to Australia in the late 90s and into the 2000s, people were interested in what I'd learned, interested in Bowen theory. I got to do some presentations at universities, and that was the precursor to setting up a training center in Bowen theory here in Australia. Of course, it was a bit of the flavor of the moment. So you make the most of that, knowing that it doesn't last forever. But they were good times to just keep open and interested in these new ideas. And I got a lot of opportunity to consult as a visiting family therapist to centers, behavioral health centers, you call them in the US. We call them CIMS or CAMS, which are child and adolescent mental health centers, publicly funded. And I had the opportunity to supervise clinicians bringing family therapy, family systems into their work. And it taught me so much. It taught me a lot about what the families bring to their help seeking. It taught me a huge amount about how clinicians pretty well all knew that family was important when a young person had symptoms. Parents are important, but just didn't know what to do with them. So that they're left just giving parents medical model psychoed about their kids' symptoms. And I thought Bowen theory has so much to offer. And if I could take Bowen theory and help clinicians be able to follow a structured program that set up this joint research approach with parents and to do the clinical interventions where parents were primary, they were at the forefront. I thought this is a way of getting Bowen's theory, particularly as it relates to the family projection process and understanding symptom development in children and young people, and to utilize that to help field that I had so much access to in teaching and consulting to help that the field access the riches in Bowen theory. So that has just become, it's like we make the most of the opportunities granted. I kind of see this as being a steward of the learning that I've had. I'm interested in a lot more than working with parents, and my clinical practice was much broader than that. But I really have narrowed my focus to this being the key focus. And I did have the opportunity to turn my experience into PhD and doctoral research of parents' experience, which has been enormously helpful in developing a semi-manualized program in the field. So yeah, and the word project is just directly stolen from Dr. Bowen's early family research, NIMH research, where he talked about what a turning point it was in his practice of family psychotherapy when the parent could make themselves the project and not the child. So that's at the heart of it. And then the word hope I didn't love the word hope because it's overused, but it was so strong in the research as parents having lost hope, feeling so helpless, and the hopefulness that comes when parents discover their own agency, what they can adjust that can ripple effect to the benefit of the child and the whole family. And that is quote, it's agency-based hope, not hope in experts to fix my child. The discovery of the hopefulness that by my differentiating efforts can make a difference for the whole family without overfunctioning. So, it's hard to say that briefly, Guillermo, but there it is.
I
Been
thought it
quite
was
a
beautiful.
journey.
I think it's so interesting that parents really do come in wanting somebody to solve the pain that they're in. They don't know what to do. Their kid's in trouble, having a symptom, something. And they're looking for a solution out of just hopelessness and anxiety and fear. And then the counselors tend to take that on and fix the kid on one hand to work on the symptom, and then offer the parents this how did you call it, the medical model education about the symptom of the child. And it kind of, but it still leaves the parents without any agency. And what you're saying is, there's something you can do. You can make a project out of your parenting, out of yourself in this.
And I just see the change it makes in family lives. I see it all the time, but I also see, and this is probably one of our challenges with Bowen theory, people aren't looking for this. Parents aren't saying, where can I find a service that just focuses on me? And they're not looking for it. Of course, the natural instinctive mechanism of parenting is with anxiety added to it is directed towards the worry about the child and finding a fix for that child. And that is fed by society's messaging and our current view of early intervention, help the child early as soon as you see symptoms. Let's get in early. Let's have a program to fix the child. So it isn't easy for parents to be open to this or clinicians to be open to this. So that's one of the elements of my current journey is how to communicate this in a way that parents don't feel so threatened. So is this just going to load more guilt on my shoulders? Is this really going to make a difference? I think that's one of the biggest challenges in getting this way of working into the children and young person's mental health field. So just learning as I go from the people who are working hard to get this way of operating in the field out there. I don't know.
I
Do
hear
you
it.
find that in Florida? Are there many parents who are really looking for that kind of help where you're operating from?
No, I think in general, parents feel like they don't know what to do at a certain point because they can't solve their attempts to solve the challenge with their kid has been fruitless. And they're looking for a solution, but they're looking for a solution for the child instead of a solution for the family, is kind of what you're saying.
Or there, that's the primary thing I find. So I'm with you on that. But I wonder if you also see what I see. There are parents out there that think if only the other parent would get their act together, my child would do okay. So then you get that triangle. And then they come along dragging a reluctant parent and inviting you to join with them to make the other parent the change project. So, as you know from Bowen theory, anxiety has us make a project out of the other. not just the child, right?
Absolutely. Parents come in. Can you help me make a project out of him or her?
And I get that. I get that.
Instead of how can each of you make a project out of yourselves?
It was one of the things way back in the 90s when I am glad I came across this theory, even though I couldn't fully understand it and fully apply it. But when my children were still young, it's one of the first things I really heard and got as I read theory, read it applied to cases. I got that I needed to get out of the way of my husband's parenting and let him make mistakes and find his way and learn from them without my interference. I learned that that triangle is completely unhelpful. And of course, I was making mistakes and learning from them. So why did I think that I needed to interject if I was witnessing him falling into an ineffective pattern? That's the journey of parenting. How do we grow if people are always jumping in to correct us? So I really do thank Dr. Bowen for that. And I think my husband would, his name is David, who's come to a number of Bowen conferences with me. He would also say, yeah, thanks for that one. That's been a gift.
I love it. And how do you help parents or maybe even clinicians that you're training think about, I think sometimes parents here make a project out of myself and it's like, but I have to do things with my kid is what I'm not going to throw my hands up here.
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot in that question. Do you mean that when parents here make a project out of myself, it's like develop my own life course separate to a parent? Is that sort of where you were coming from?
Yeah, well, I'm wondering what parents hear sometimes that gets in the way of them thinking about this in a way that could help them move forward.
Well, I mean, one thing I'm often clarifying is that the project out of self is not a solo self-improvement or well-being project. Of course, you would know that. It is a project of how am I managing myself in this relationship? And so, how do we help someone see that? The core of the parenthood program that is mapped out in a manual. Of course, people bring their own style and person to it and make it their own. It's not just this Jenny Brown cookie cutter, but there is a core to every meeting, which is tracing the emotional process that the parent is in with the child, tracing that interaction and stepping back from it. And thinking about what's working, what's not working, that learning to observe self in the relationship is where the ahas come from. And that, of course, is Bowen's who, what, when, where, what next, how did you respond questions. It's all of the tracing of the relationship and emotional process, not getting bogged down in the content or the causes. And so helping parents to make a project is helping them observe the what's going on in their the in round and round in circles in their relationship. And I think you said something else about parents continuing to do what wasn't working. Was that part of your question? Just how
I'm
do
not
you help
sure.
parents step out of that? I'll throw in a little piece on that with just where my brain goes, and then I'll pause and take a breath. But something that struck me as I research parents' experience of their involvement in their child's mental health treatment for my PhD, I remember a parent saying it's absolutely stuck with me. Said to me, I would rather keep doing what isn't working with my child than doing nothing at all. That to me was very telling, is why we keep doing what isn't working. Because giving up just feels like dropping all hope aside, or there's nothing more to do. And many people could see that, and parents could see that their helping efforts were not getting them anywhere, but at least they were showing their devotion and continuing to try over and over again. And so I hold that in mind in this Parent Hope Project. It's just, and how hard it is for a parent to step back from doing what isn't working, even when they can see it. And that can take a bit of time sometimes. I had one mother recently say to me, I'm not doing a load of clinical work anymore because of developing this content and training others to use it. But in the small number of cases I have, I learned so much from them. And a mother said to me in relation to checking on her son, what her son is looking at on his screen, an older adolescent son, she said, I know that continuing to go into his room to check up on him is not helping at all. If I were to stop checking up on him, I'd have to stop being a mother. It was that strong. Like someone would have to stop me being a mother. And that was where she was at. And I would never correct that, but that's kind of just part of the journey of working on observing self. The first step is I can see it's not working, but I don't yet see an alternative. And to just patiently keep working for people to explore themselves and look at the context for that. But I thought that was very telling. It's very hard to cut that intense monitoring of a child when it feels like that's your job description. But of course, there are many different versions of intensive parenting, aren't there? That's one of them.
Absolutely. I think it's so helpful to for people to remember, for clinicians to remember exactly what you're saying, that what people are up against sometimes are their best intentions of if I don't do this, I feel like I'm not doing the right thing in some way, some version of that, because of whatever we've internalized story we've written or pattern we've lived out over time from, and that's
And it
just
always
you got
sits
to
in a
appreciate
triangle,
that.
of course. You've got the family of origin piece, and you've got, of course, this mother is very critical of the father for not stepping in enough. So that's in the primary triangle, and it's all part of what drives it. It's never just in the individual, as we started saying. And of course, I talk about the what I learned from the parents that I've worked with and collected interview data from over the years, but the parenting journey doesn't stop for myself, and I still make my mistakes and notice when I with my grandchildren where I struggle to step back when there's distress in a little one who's precious to me and getting in the road of my kids. So I don't want to give the impression that I've learned all these lessons, all those instincts are there below the surface waiting to be reactivated and free for me to learn from.
You're
Which
not
is
at the
good, isn't
point
it? We
to
can make mistakes and we can learn from them and get back on track.
absolutely. I'm just wondering when you're going to get to the point you can walk up to one of your grandkids and just push them over, you know.
Well, there's an interesting thought for distress tolerance practice. I have that's an interesting one.
Jenny, so t tell me, you know, a lot of people think about, especially clinicians or people in a specific profession, think about writing a book. They talk about it, they muse about it. But you did it. How did you come? How did you get there, and what did it take to follow through? Because I think that's the hardest part.
Well, I've heard other guests on your program, which I've really enjoyed listening to your conversations with others, say that there is a recognition of a need for what you like to give people who haven't had the opportunity to study Bowen theory in depth. Like, what's the entry point? How is this accessible? And as a clinician, I would like for many clients over the years to give them something to read if they ask for it. And how can I read more and find out more? And as wonderful as it was for me to read Family Evaluation and then Family Therapy and Clinical Practice, it's not a great entry point for many people. So what are the books I'd like to recommend to people? And for growing yourself up, it was the book that hadn't been written that I wanted out there. I wanted to fill in a gap as I perceived it. I loved and I still love Roberta Gilbert's book, and Extraordinary Relationships was a popular, useful one. And I thought it was so useful on explaining theory clearly, well, and appropriately, was not distorting theory, simplifying but not distorting. And then I did love the work of Harriet Lerner, the Dance of Anger, Dance of Intimacy books, which is kind of partly my era as well when they were very popular. But I felt that Harriet Lerner, who had a pretty good influence from Bowen theory, talked about triangles and self and managing self and relationships. But it was so full of case examples and not quite enough of the theory to make sense of them. So I wanted to pull the two together and have case examples. I also wanted as many examples for men as for women, but a lot of the books were more for women. And I've worked with as many men as women, so I wanted their stories in this book as well. So that was a big motivating force for me. And it truly, I went in so naively. I had no writing training. I wrote a monolith of a book, way too long to do anything with, and kind of had to start again to pull it together and get a little bit of input from someone who understood publishing a book. So I needed some help at the end when I'd written something way too big. And so writing the second book that I've written some smaller books and self-published in the meantime and written the parenting manual, the Parent Hope manual, which is available for purchase as well. But this book that that I submitted back in August, I learned a lot from the first one. And it had been in my head. I'd been writing it in my head for years, which in many ways is not great for a book because you put too much into it. But I'm a clinician and a researcher more before I'm a writer at this point. Maybe I'll do some more writing in whatever the years enable me to do going forward. But when you don't get many opportunity to write, I think it could be a downfall of both of my books that every chapter could be a book in itself. But I had someone who wrote an endorsement for Growing Yourself Up who'd previously been a professional musician in a band. He said, "Jenny, you've released all your best singles on the one album." Save some of it. And some, I don't know if people find that about the book. That's some of my experience. I do like writing. I do enjoy being able to put all those stories in my head down into writing.
I wonder if that that having each chapter could be a book. I wonder if some of that is just about the way the concepts you're writing about play out. Like that there's
Yeah.
something about those concepts that you could write a book about each one.
Could indeed. Yeah, you could indeed. And I respect what Dr. Kathleen Smith has been able to do in kind of crystallizing, opening up about anxiety and then opening up about people-pleasing sensitivities. I think it's more contained and manageable, but, and I really appreciate that about her writing.
Well, all I can tell you is that whenever I teach your book, my students they really it they love it first of all, and it sticks with them. They get theory, they get the idea of reciprocity, of how it plays out in relationships, this idea of making a project of yourself. So it's been incredibly useful for them and for me.
Well, I am glad this theory's been so useful to me. It's joyous when you see other people find it useful for themselves and the important people in their lives.
So, Jenny, what is there anything you've been thinking about recently? That anything that's been brewing on your mind?
Well, I am probably too absorbed in thinking about parenting, family projection process, how to get it out there in the world. But Guillermo, it is so interesting. I training mental health clinicians and educators involved in schools. I just am so interested in how they take on these ideas and what are the barriers? What are the barriers? What do they get caught up in thinking about my experience? So I probably spend too much time thinking about that at the moment, but I find it very interesting. And I guess it's just continuing research, right? It's small R research, but we just continue to learn. And I find that very satisfying. But of
I
course
hear.
life is more than that, but that is so much of my learning and my efforts at the moment. And it's
What are you
fun.
f
It is fun.
Yeah, you gotta be having fun. What do you find in are some of the main barriers when you're speaking to clinicians about taking this, hearing it, absorbing it, taking it on?
So the biggest barrier that I see over and over again is we talked about it earlier, the clinicians who want to jump in and do clever therapizing. So even when they're practicing, tracing the interaction, drawing out the emotional process, they will hear a parent say, and they're role playing it in my training, which I've got online as well, and lots of role plays of tracing the interaction and encouraging people to practice it. And they just find themselves wanting, when a parent says, "I rushed in and did such and such," for the therapist to say, "What do you think was driving that in you? What do you think that comes from? What shaped that idea that you need to be that kind of person?" And they start therapizing, or in the current language in the therapy world, mentalizing it with the idea that I'm going to help you as a parent understand the cause of your ineffective parenting. And it totally takes it in a different direction. So that would be the main one. And the other is just the pull to want to active listen everything. If we need to repeat everything our client says, so what I'm hearing you saying is la 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 la, and this is how you're feeling, this is how you're thinking. Did I get that right? So much counselor training in that area, which I think gets in the way of the person telling their process, really thinking about their process, and it also takes too long. It's very inefficient in a counseling 1 hour or 50 minutes. And then the other one is the call to need to validate and repair the client, to just give lots of empathic validation. And what I see people learning is they're practicing this Bowen-informed clinical skill of tracing the interaction. They do discover, especially when they sit in the role of the parent in a role play, that when someone is really interested in them describing what they're doing and has a tone of respectful curiosity, they don't need empathic validation. It's just there in the process. So they would be they're three things I'm learning, and on just how much attachment theory gets into the mix for people. That sense of the parent has absorbed a internalized attachment style from the way they're parented, and let me help them correct that for the benefit of the child, which is not systems, is it? It's quite a linear thing, and it takes the therapy down a whole different track. So there, I could keep
Just
going here, love, but they're the
it's
things that I'm learning from people as I do this training with people.
I think I find a lot of similar things in my students as they move into the internship practicum. Sometimes I'll tell them, stop trying to be a therapist so much.
But people have to discover an alternative, don't they? Or they just become like, I've got nothing to give here. What do I do instead? What does it look like? I don't know what your listeners will think about this, but I hear many people say, I even who've studied Bowen theory for a long time, I get the theory pretty well. I have applied it with great benefit in my own life and relationships, but I don't know what it looks like in the clinical space. And interestingly, as I've read closely Bowen's original research papers, he wrote a similar observation of his clinical team and research team, that the last step and that is hardest for people to do is to take the understanding of theory and turn it into a clinical set of processes and tools. And I think that's another thing that has motivated me to put it into a manualized form to give people an experience of that. And then they can make up their own minds how they want to apply the theory. I
To
don't
give
know
them a starting
if you heard
space.
that with your students, that the initial ahas are maybe hard to translate into what do I do in the clinical room.
Absolutely. They like the ideas. They get turned on by them, start using them in their life. But then
Yes.
that switch of, well, how do I apply that with clients? What does that look like clinically? Is yes, I see that as well.
And it's tough, isn't it, to get the balance right? Because I know Bowen understandably was really reluctant for anyone to be able to watch his tapes, and they were kept and still are closely, not just available in the public domain, watching him do his clinical work. That you can't just copy somebody else. That's not going to get you very far. Just like you can't read a parenting manual and know how to parent. So it's a tricky balance as to giving people the experience of tracing emotional process and not doing repair or analyzing content, but for it not to become just a pseudo self-copying. That's a tension for sure. I'm aware of that tension, but I still think it's an important thing to show people what it can look like in practice for them to read. It's another way of turning the lights on of the theory.
I really appreciate that idea of just tracing emotional process. I think it's a good way to get people like the bridge for them to take these concepts and how do I begin to apply them to a clinical situation. Just help your client trace emotional process.
And you know the strange thing that I discovered? I wrote a manualized program that I trialed over many years, piloted with different people, got feedback, including from the group in Canada, getting feedback from Bowen clinicians to see where it needed tweaking. But I always wrote it thinking it would be useful for those not trained in Bowen theory to start to get a flavor of a way of working in Bowen theory that then might sow a seed for them wanting to study Bowen theory rather than the other way around. But guess what happened? I started using my own manual, and parents were making much more progress than I was when I was just doing my thing. So I made a discovery that the manual that the parent holds in their hand and I hold in my hand really helps to put us on an even page together, asking the questions together. Parents could take away some of the case examples to read, some of the reflections to read. They would come ready to work harder than before I used a manual. Not all parents. Some are so, you just they come and they've done no thinking or reading in the middle of sessions. Just depends where they sit on the continuum of anxiety and differentiation. But on the whole, I saw parents working harder using a manual. So I it was a surprise for me to see that it was helpful to me, and it never stopped me taking people in the direction of working on their marriage, working on their family of origin, working in different parts of the system, but starting from where the pain was, which is my child is really doing well and nothing's helping. And having a parent have a manual that where they can see what we're working on together, there's no mystery to what is my therapist going to do today that elevates me to too important a position. We were much more on that plane of therapy as joint research, as Bowen said it. It was his therapy approach. We're joint researchers.
What an interesting discovery.
Yeah, it was a surprise. It's a kind of a weird thing because I would sit there thinking, I'm glad someone wrote this manual.
Then you're like, I
It's
wrote
not
it.
like, weren't I clever? I didn't. It's not that. It's just that this was a way of really moving more towards that joint research where clients were less dependent on me as the therapist. And so it's been an interesting discovery. I'm sure there are other ways to work on that, Guillermo, without needing a manual. But there you have it. That was one of my surprises in the journey.
Well, it sounds like a wonderful project, Jenny. So let me ask just to I'm being mindful of your time here. What word would you like to leave with? What is it? Do you have anything you'd like to say to, I don't know, clinicians, parents, any words of inspiration, hope? I don't know.
It's hard to come up with that word. And I'm not going to be saying anything that people haven't heard, but it's exactly where my thinking went. It is working on self in our system is uncomfortable, but hope building. That'll be it. It's not comfortable, but it is rewarding.
Sounds wonderful, Jenny. Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Me too.